So step seven, speaking on promise seven.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Jessica, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Jessica.
Number seven is we will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. I think when we're talking about the promises, it's important for me to remember that they are promised at the ninth step and no sooner than that, and in some cases later than that. I just did my ninth step this year, and I can say honestly that I used to look at these promises and I used to think that they were very abstract, like immaterial things where it's like, oh yeah, that's like a nice thought. But I didn't believe that they would like actually come true for me. And I can honestly say that they have. And in talking about losing interest in selfish things and gaining interest in our fellows, that's something that was like a very direct consequence of working the ninth step. For those who might not know, it's making amends to people that we've harmed. And coming to terms with ways in which I've been selfish and inconsiderate towards others, that journey really began for me in a deep way in the fourth step, where I had to look at my part in things for the first time. And that was really hard because, you know, there's people in my life that, like, you know, like, I've definitely wronged them. Like, I've definitely done something wrong. And then there's people who've done wrong to me. And it's really hard to look at my part in that when it's so easy to be like, but look what this person did. Look what they did to me. And it was really hard to come to terms with the fact that, like, yeah, I had a part in it too. In not just some of them, but in every single case. So the ninth step comes around and I actually have to do something about it. My first amends that I made was to an ex. I figured it would be easy because we're on good terms and he's in program, so like, he gets it. And after that, I decided to dive into the deep end and make the hardest amends first because I just wanted to get it out of the way. And the first really difficult amends I made was to a former boss of mine. I had worked for her for a while and I was her assistant, and it was just not a good situation. It was a really bad work situation, and I had all sorts of complaints about the way she treated me, the way she talked to me, the way I was forced to work, etc. And prior to the fourth step, and especially not to the ninth step, had I ever really considered that I had a part in it? But I absolutely did. I'd eaten food out of her fridge and like not told her, you know, and like not just some, you know, when you're a compulsive overeater, it's not just some of the food, it's a lot. and there's a lot of things that I had done out of spite to her. So I had to really look at my part in it, because I could go on for days about all the awful things that, you know, that she did to me, blah, blah, blah. But I was very hesitant to talk about or think about the things that I did to her. So I made that amends. And she forgave me, and I went from, like, having this animosity towards somebody to having a new kinship and, like, a new peace with them. And I realized that apologizing to her was helpful to her, you know? It wasn't really about me as much, although, you know, when I was, like, kind of, like, building it up in my head, getting ready to meet her, like, it was all about the, like, me, of like, oh my god, and this is going to be so embarrassing, it's going to be so humiliating, and the payoff was just completely worth it. And so as I continued in my ninth step and continued to make some of the easier amends and some of the more difficult amends, I really found that the most rewarding amends were the ones where the other person was like, yeah, you kind of like, you know, like they had wanted that apology. And that was really hard because I want to have this picture of myself as you know, somebody who's done no wrong and who's always been so selfless. And that's just not the case. One of the most significant and one of the most difficult amends I made was to my dad's girlfriend, who I had a really bad relationship with. And I, you know, we didn't get along very well. And I made my amends to her, and, like, you know, about 10 seconds into the amend, she, like, burst out crying and, like, threw her arms around me and was like, I've been waiting for years for you to say that to me and for our relationship to ever be better than what it is. And it was like, oh, my God, I had no idea that I had had this impact on this woman. And in that moment, it had nothing to do with me and making my amends and checking off my list of people I had wronged. It was about, oh, my gosh, like, this is really helping her. And I got a letter from her, like, several weeks later, thanking me again and pointing out some more of the things that I could have done. You know, like, after setting that letter aside for a couple of days, I was like, yeah, that, I mean, I guess I needed to hear that. And I guess I needed to, you know, I really needed to come to terms with that. And so much of the greatest strides in my spiritual growth that I've made in this program have been looking at things that are difficult. Particularly within myself, and selfishness is a big part of that. And now, here I'm in program, continuing to work that, you know, like, I don't think the promises are like you, like, reach it and then you're, like, at that plateau forever. It's kind of like that this promise comes true, and through the maintenance of my program and my spiritual program, I get to keep them. So losing interest in selfish things and being more interested in other people's lives, it's like a daily practice for me, and it's a cornerstone of my recovery in OA. It was one of the first things that I was taught was going to be, like, an important thing when I was in OA. So, you know, it came true in the amends and the amends process, and then it's also come true through working this program in many other ways. Sponsorship is a big one. When I first came into program, like, I really, really wanted a sponsor. It sounded really cool, but I never wanted to be a sponsor. I thought, what could I possibly offer to people? That sounds really scary. That sounds really intimidating. And now I get to give away, thank you for that, see that. I get to give away the experience that I've gained in this program to my sponsors. And when I meet with them, there's no, like, you know, they ask how I'm doing, and I say, fine, but I don't go into, like, a whole thing about my life and my issues and what's going on with me. In that moment, like, I really genuinely, truly care about what's going on with my sponsee, how can I be of service, how can I help them. And then I try to extend that to other parts of my program, like coming in, you know, helping out at these events. And I do it, I guess in some ways you could say it's selfish because I feel better after I've done it, but that's, I guess that's the only allowable form of selfishness, in a way. So I keep doing it because it keeps making me feel like I'm in recovery and that I'm maintaining the promises that were given to me and that I'm being true to my program. And others benefit from it. And I think I'm happiest when I can be a benefit to others. Thank you.
My name is Eleanor, and I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Eleanor.
And my promise is self-seeking will slip away. I'm going to adjust my chair here so I'm not crowded. Wow, well, you know, I first heard the promises on December 28th, 1988. And it was not at an OA meeting. I came to OA a couple years later. But it was my first 12-step program. And when they read the promises, I literally came to tears. I mean, they moved me so deeply that, you know, I just really wanted that. And that kept me coming back to these rooms. It was after I'd been in program for a while that I learned that you didn't get the promises until step 9. And it's ironic because when I first heard the steps, it was step 9 that scared me half to death. I didn't want to do that. I didn't want to do that for a couple of reasons. One, I felt like I had been blamed all my life for doing everything wrong, and I thought that step 9 was about basically beating myself up. And the other how I had done wrong, how the food and being isolated, I wasn't showing up for life. That's how I harmed a lot of people. I didn't show up. I couldn't show up for life. I couldn't be there for people. So somebody told me in this program that one of the ways she works, I think it was this, but it might have been another one. They kind of blur together after being around a while. She said, instead of thinking about what I can get from the situation, I think about what I can bring to the situation. And that is so helpful to me in so many different situations. What can I bring to this situation? And I was sitting here tonight, and I was thinking about the fact that I had a long time in L.A., and I have some history. You know, I'm inadvertently one of the long-timers, or old-timers. I prefer long-timers to old-timers. And one of the things I can share with you tonight is this program that you're involved in tonight, The Promises. It was called, when it first started, it was called Candlelighting Ceremony. And it was held in the log cabin on Robertson in West Hollywood. And the way it worked was we had real candles back then. This is before like the fire goes out. And we had real candles, and you know, it was interesting because sometimes the wax would drip, you know, on you or something else. And there was that year that somebody's hair caught on fire. That was unfortunate. But it was a lovely ceremony that night. It's a singed shirt. But the way it would work is that someone would have one candle, a real candle. I think someone said yes, they remember. And that person would light another person's candle, and not two candles for them. And those two people would light two other candles, and so on and so forth, until the whole room was candlelit. And it was beautiful. And the concept was that is the idea of one compulsive overeater helping another. And so bringing you back to self-seeking in a simple way, that's, you know, what I've learned in this program and doing my 9-7 myth, because I eventually did do this 9-7 myth. I haven't finished them yet. For one thing, I keep popping up with new ones I need to make. But the self-seeking, as I went through the process, I began, as the last speaker alluded to, I began to realize that there was a blessing for the person I was making to the amends to. It wasn't just me. It wasn't about me. And a lot of those amends that I was afraid of making were actually, when I started really getting to them, I could, you know, say, what am I going to bring to this situation? Instead of what am I going to get out of it? How can I help somebody? Instead of how can I feel better about what I've done? And in that way, self-seeking is slowly slipping away. When I came to OA, I was not only obsessed with food, I was obsessed with what people thought about me, whether I was doing it right or wrong, on and on and on. It was all about fear. I was in a tremendous amount of fear, and I certainly feel fear today, but I don't feel the way I used to. And I've gotten a set of tools in this program. You know, putting down the food is just the first part, and I've had my ups and downs in this program, and in fact, I've been talking with my sponsor about recommitting my abstinence. You know, back in March, I felt like I needed to recommit my abstinence, and I had 21 years at that point. So, more will be revealed. In any event, I keep coming back. I keep working the steps. I've had tremendous healing in this program. Self-seeking is slipping away. I really do think about what I can bring to a situation instead of what I'm coming from that situation. And I think that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Hi, Albert.
Number 9. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change.
while, like, nervousness hit me hard right now. Before program, I just wanted to be invisible. I didn't want anyone to see me. I just wanted to be in my own little corner of the world, not bother anybody, and everybody just leave me alone. And to stand up here with a microphone, like, that's still the same. It's so uncomfortable being seen right now. It's so uncomfortable being seen. And I'm so blessed for the number of miracles that have happened in my life, in that my outlook and attitude has completely changed, and everything that I thought I knew about myself in the world is completely colored by the lens that OA has blessed me with. And really, the level of self-awareness and self-acceptance that I've been blessed with through working the steps and continuing to challenge my beliefs has been nothing short of a miracle. Before the rooms, I was angry. I thought I knew it all, and nobody could help me. I had no hope. I had done it all. I tried it all, and absolutely nothing worked for me. Absolutely nothing. And a good number of you know my story, that rock bottom for me was praying for God to just give me the courage to take my own life. And that came to me. I had that. And I set out to end my own life. And God showed up for me in the craziest of miracles and said, no, it's not your time. And I found a therapist who encouraged me to come to these rooms. And the first promise, this was probably the first promise I experienced on day one. My entire outlook and attitude changed when I heard someone say my story. And it came from someone that I never would have imagined could feel the things that I felt about myself, about food. And I was completely saved in that moment, because before that first day, I was completely and totally alone. And I was looking for every single answer that could possibly solve this problem, and I couldn't find it. And a bachelor's degree and a master's degree and a PhD in psychology did not help. It only made things worse. It made me believe that there was some formula that I could apply, that if I just did it right, then everything would be better. And there were times when it did. I applied the diet, I applied the exercise plan, only to find deeper levels of pain and misery and failure when I gained the weight back. Or the weight loss didn't change my feelings about whether or not I was lovable or employable. And I don't have those feelings today. And the miracle that's come to me after 9 years of recovery and 130 pounds of weight loss, the miracle that came to me was I don't have to break my back holding up the facade of what recovery is. That I don't have to pretend to be someone else so you think that I have some kind of spiritual recovery. That doesn't exist. That transcending my compulsive eating, that those thoughts didn't allow me to transcend my humanness. And that I can still be angry and upset and feel unworthy and unlovable. And that was okay. That they were also not character defects for me to pray away. That I can sit with the fear that I was not enough and talk to it in a way that was loving. That I can look at my feelings, that I can look at my trauma, that I can look at the deepest, darkest parts of myself that were not human and make space for them. Where I had shoved food to numb my pain, I could create space inside of me for everything. And while I totally feel like I live in a time where my entire outlook and attitude could be expressed in anger and aggression, I just make space for it. That allowing myself to love myself meant loving everything that was bad in me, and every thought that I tried to suppress with food was just a part of the human spirit. And if I could make room for the worst thoughts that I had, then maybe they would leave me alone. Or that these thoughts that just came to me because they were lonely, because they were feeling ignored, and that those were the things that were manifesting in my life. and my outlook has changed on life and my attitude in that there is nothing about me that needs fixing. There never has been anything that needs fixing. So here I am. I feel that the promises are possible at any time we are willing to look at ourselves with a level of forgiveness for ourselves. And that I was working step 9 on the first day that I came into program when I decided that I would just go sit with a bunch of other people who shared my compulsion instead of going home and binging away my feelings. And that the self-love that we're supposed to give ourselves, I believe we give ourselves that in step 9, but the amends that we make to every bit of our fragmented self that's just not enough or not lovable or whatever that might be, that I can start loving that at any time in my program. And that this game that I loved to play so much, that when I do this, then this will happen. When I am in a relationship, then I'll be happy. When I'm in the job of my dreams, then I'll be happy. When I lose another 20 pounds, then I'll be happy. That I can let go of the then and just be happy now. Mm-hmm. And it is a hell of a thing to be present and in full acceptance of the person that you see in the mirror. And it's given me this level of love and compassion for everybody that I see. Even though I'm wearing reading glasses and I can't see anyone's face. The miracles that have happened to me in this program are... Oh, Linda, you forgot to...
Oh,
yeah, okay,
yeah.
That's right. I'll wrap it up.
I also went to you.
There was a time when I'd get up and I'd say, God is my employer, and every day my job is to, one, wake up and pray for a miracle, two, believe that a miracle is possible for me, three, start seeing miracles everywhere, and the last one was to be a miracle to other people. And that my life is lived trying to be a miracle for other people when I didn't think that my life was worth anything. I mean, there is absolutely nothing more that I can ask for to look back on my life and feel like it was well lived. And with that, I will end. Thank you.
Composer of our leader.
Yeah.
10. Fear of people and of economic security will leave us. I was one of those people that was silently grumbling over here. That was the exact one that I did not want to hear. I'm in my second time around the steps, and I'm in my 9th step right now, and there's some financial, new financial amends that have come up, and I feel weird about them. I feel weird about them, but I just want to pause and say that I'm so grateful to be in the room. There's so many people that mean a lot to me in this room. The two people sitting next to me, my recovery really stands on the shoulders of so many people that have so much more time on this panel and in the room, so just thank you for that. This particular room is very special to me because I actually I got sober in this room. This is where I decided to really take the 12 steps journey series, is in this particular room. I found my first sponsor. The first time I heard about OA was actually in this room. And it's just a really special place, and it looks good with all the candlelight. Fear of people and of economic insecurity. I definitely can relate to those, and I've had freedom. It's been my experience that you can get some of these promises before you get to step 9. You know, the change in the perspective, the newfound happiness. I mean, that was what the pink cloud was for me. As I did start to get these promises before I was halfway done through my steps. But, it is specifically talking about being, halfway through your 9th step. And I have gotten incredible relief the first time I did my 9th step, incredible relief from fear of people and economic insecurity. And, you know, I was pausing and I got this, you know, I got this particular promise, and you know, I was thinking like, man, why did I get this one? What is the purpose behind this? You know, and I just said a little prayer, God, you know, please guide my thoughts, feelings, actions, and words. You know, thy will, not mine, be done. And what came to me is that I have to remember that it's not on me to figure all this out. I don't know how. I don't know what. God, I need help. Sponsor, I need help. Fellow, I need help. And what came to me is just to remember that this is like a we program. And a lot of clarity just came in while I was sitting here about where my where the economic insecurity is coming from. And my life is just getting bigger. You know, I'm taking on new challenges. I was lovingly supported my first several years of recovery and didn't have to pay rent. And I still have that luxury if I want it. But I desire a little bit more, and I'm growing right now. And there's nothing like having to pay LA rent in LA to spark a little, you know, financial insecurity. And, you know, so much so that it, you know, I'm like, oh man, do I need another program for this stuff? And you know what the truth is just, I'm growing. I don't know how, and I don't know what. God, I need help. Sponsor, I need help. Fellows, I need somebody to hold my hand as I walk through this process and I mature a little bit. And it feels really good to just acknowledge that for what it is. Of course, there's more work that has to be done around my new financial amends that have come up. And, you know, I'm excited about that because I had a ton of new amends, and I remember what it felt like the first time, you know, actually cashing out and taking care of some of that financial stuff. And it's so great how that, like, that invisible but yet very real, tangible boulder just gets lifted off your shoulder when you take the plunge, follow direction, and make that amends. And I'm excited to continue on in that path and that journey. And I know these promises will come true again, and maybe they'll slip away, and I'll have to do some more work, and that's okay. You know, that's okay. That's what recovery looks like for me. It's a little bit of circle. You know, I get a little bit of pain, and then I got to go do some growth, and then I get a little complacent, and then I get a little bit of pain again, and it's a circle. It's not a linear path for me, as somebody else before me has already said. And, you know, I just have to remember that the promises don't have to look perfect for me right now. I just have to be really honest about where I'm at and remember that I don't have to do it alone. The only time that I'm really going to be in a lot of fear is when I'm trying to take it on all myself. When I'm putting that level of expectations on myself, that's what kind of sparks up the fear. And, you know, I just say, speaking on fear of people, tremendous relief in that category. I've always been a very outgoing, gregarious type of personality, and then I got really, really big. You know, I got over 300 pounds, and I got really fearful, and I would meet people, and particularly I would meet women, and I would come up with a million reasons why I couldn't talk to that person, or why I wasn't good enough to date, or why I wasn't whatever enough to be a part of the group or to be a part of or to express my feelings. And I had to pause for a moment to think about that, and I have so much more recovery in that category as well. You know, just simple things like expressing to my manager that I need to work remotely on a couple of different days, and just expressing it, being honest, and letting go of whatever the outcome is. And having her respond very lovingly, okay, no problem. I met a woman about, actually a while ago, but, you know, I was always, when I was in my disease and I was the 300-pound, insecure, egomaniac, I would have feelings towards people, and I would never be able to just express that, you know, when I would develop a crush on a woman or whatnot. And I was the type of chubby guy that would just kind of hold that in, and maybe be your friend, and maybe you would pick up on it, maybe you wouldn't. And you know, I met a friend or fellow, and developed some feelings, and just had the courage to express how I felt, and we have left the results up to God. And now me and that lovely woman have been together for almost a year, coming up our anniversaries in January. And, you know, all that is possible through the program. Because left to my own devices, I'm at home alone, large pizza from Papa John's, 2 liter of Pepsi, donuts from Krispy Kreme, fourth, fifth meals, desperately wanting to connect with anybody and everybody, but not knowing how. And my life does not look like that today. And I have to remember that. And thank you, guys.
Hi, she's a compulsive overeater.
Hi,
everyone. Thank you so much, Emily, for asking me for service. You are a special event. God, it's so dark, and I'm sort of grateful for it and sort of pissed that I spent so much time on my makeup. We'll intuitively know how to handle situations and choose to baffle us. I have to say, today I've been looking at the clock a lot and adding 8 hours because I grew up in England, and England is 8 hours ahead. And 31 years ago today is the anniversary of my mom's passing. And so I keep reliving the day. And, you know, I was 13, and I came off the bus and opened the door, and she was dead on the floor. And so I'm like, oh, now's the time that I call the ambulance, and now's the time that I, you know. And the truth is, like, now's the time that my life ended as the way that I knew it. And it set up a lot of the fear that I live with on a daily basis, which is something bad can happen. Something really bad can happen, you know. So, yeah, that's what I spent today. I have, by God's grace, 18 and a half years of abstinence in this program. I could not stop eating. I was a size 16, and today I'm somewhere between a 10 and a 12. And I was a binger. Couldn't stop eating. Huge meals, huge portions, double and triple, and salt and sugar and, you know, I was a pharmacist. I was really good at finding that formula that was really legal, available at your local 7-Eleven, and did not need a prescription. And it was readily available in my home. And I did really, really well with it for as long as it lasted, and it worked, you know. When I first came into the program and I became abstinent, something very interesting happened. I was always like rushing somewhere, stopping to pick up something, usually coffee and a pastry, then rushing somewhere else and then picking something else up and then rushing something else and doing something else. And that was just sort of my eating pattern. And dieting and binging and dieting and binging. And so when I became abstinent, it was like someone opened up the blinds in a room that hadn't been opened for 26 years, basically. And it was like, whoa, holy mother of God, right? What is going on? And everything was brighter and louder and sharper. And I was running an errand at the shopping center where I'm often stop and get milkshake and french fries. I think they go really well together. And I remember I picked up the dry cleaning, I got in the car, and I drove this SUV. And I put the car in reverse, and something called to me that said, don't back up. And I don't know what it was. To this day, I don't know what it was. And I put the car in park, and I took a deep breath,
and a toddler went running, like, from my side view. I saw this toddler running from behind my car. And I don't know, maybe I'd seen the toddler in my subconscious. I don't know what was going on. And I was like, oh, my God. And I got out of the car, and I ran down the parking lot and picked up this little toddler who had, like, no one with him. And I was like, what is going on here? Turned out that the mom was sitting in the bookstore reading to her 7-year-old or whatever. And she hadn't realized that the toddler had toddled away, walked out of the bookstore, down the parking lot, behind my car. And in a Navigator, you don't see toddlers, right? And that was my first inkling to, if I had had that milkshake and those french fries in my hand, I would have run that kid over. And it was only the brightness of the blinds that had been opened up that had allowed me to have this feeling like, something doesn't feel right. Did I see something? What just happened? And so that is my, I guess that's my microcosm of program. And can I always say that while I intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle me? Hell no, right? There are times where the intuition comes through, but I have to be really careful because intuition can also look a lot like character defects. And one of my character defects is fear. So if I'm like, oh, too scary, I intuitively feel like I shouldn't be doing that. Right? It's like, wait a second, is that intuition or is that fear? Or is that making assumptions? Or is that self-centeredness? Or is that many of the other slew of character defects that some have been removed and some haven't. And so I have a sponsor. I have fellows. I have a pit crew. A pit crew, you guys. Of like, I'm a fine-tuned sports car man, right? Like, I pull up at that, and there's like 7 women, right? One changes the wheels, one puts in the fluid, one puts in the gas, you know? And I call them, and I'm like, hey, guys, this is what's going on. And I write, and then I meditate. And then I talk, and then I think about it. And it's like, only then can I make a decision about something. Because left to my own devices, and it's funny because the 9th step, which is, right, this comes at the end of the 9th step, is I made one of my most powerful 9th step amends, which I was so excited to make, and I was so genuine and so excited to make this amends. And the person I made the amends to said, you know what, it's fine. My expectations of you are so low that it really doesn't matter. Right? That was the response to my 9-step amends. And there are others that were glorious, but you know what, after I made that, and that woman is one of my best friends now. Like one of my closest friends, because the relationship just healed. But it was only after the 9th step that I was like, you know what, I'm really not that awful. I'm really not. I'm not a loser. I'm not incompetent. And it's only now, after 18 years, that, you know, I'm tired of when this, then that. You know, let me hold on to that Weight Watchers membership, because when I lose that last 15 pounds, then. And you know what, guys? I recently lost 15 pounds. Not only did nobody notice, okay? Okay, but it really didn't make a difference. Right? And so, I'm done. I'm done not being good enough. I'm done, like, tomorrow it will look better when. Like, it's pretty freaking perfect now with all its flaws. And that's what program has given me. That's what, you know, putting out my hand to the newcomer or holding my sponsor's hand in the other hand. And in 18 years, I've never not been sponsored. Never. I've had 2 sponsors. 9 years, and now 9.5 years. Because I don't know how to do it without guidance and a foundation. And I'm very, very grateful. So thank you for letting me share.
Absent, 97-pound weight loss, and I sponsored. I have number 12. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. And I don't believe I ever suddenly realized. I didn't just, like, I was, you know, sitting here the whole time thinking, gosh, was there a time when I actually, oh, yeah, that's it. God, yes, right on. Okay, now I understand. Or, you know, finishing the fourth and fifth step and going, ah, now I understand the meaning of life. It just never happened, you know. Every time I finished a step, it was like a satisfaction because I was able to finish something, you know, that I started. I started in another program, and I've always been a compulsive overeater because I remember stories when I was young, but I did another drug that kept me thin for a long time, and I started in recovery for that. And when I worked the first time I worked the second and third step, my sponsor said, just believe that I believe. And I'm like, okay, because I didn't really have an understanding of a higher power or anything like that. But, you know, throughout the whole process of recovery, they told me that, you know, you need to have a higher power in your life, and God is basically responsible for everything. And you know, at this point in my recovery, I do believe that. I believe that my higher power is the sole, you know, the sole responsible person, or the sole responsible spiritual entity, or whatever you want to call it, that has allowed me to have this recovery that I have today, and this great life that I have today. And, you know, like when I first got clean, I used food. That's when my compulsive overeating really showed up. I gained 100 pounds in a few months, and that went on for 7 more years until I finally got to OA. And when I first got to OA, I tried your guys' ideas and went on my own, and it failed miserably. And the second time I came, I found a sponsor off the communique, and, you know, when I worked the steps with him, it was amazing. I felt, you know, because I had finally stopped using. I didn't stop using when I stopped that other drug. I just found a new drug, and you know, food became that drug of choice. And when I had stopped compulsive overeating and started working the steps, it was probably the most thorough I had ever done it up to that point. I felt so much relief, and you know, I got slowly but surely I got a closer conscious contact with my higher power. And even, you know, this one right here tells me we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Okay, throughout the whole process, they've been telling me through the book and, you know, everything else that God is responsible. God is responsible. God is responsible. And everybody has their own version of God, which is so great about this program. But, you know, your higher power, my higher power, has given me the best life I could ever imagine. You know, I'm standing in front of people that I don't know, and I'm sharing my experience, strength, and hope, because I know that, you know, today I want to help other people, but I also want to keep my recovery, because that's what they told me. If I do this, I'm going to keep my recovery. And my higher powers allowed that. This program has given me freedom from compulsive overeating. That's the first thing I got, because I didn't want anything when I got here. I just wanted to get thinner. You know, I just wanted to lose weight. I didn't realize that I was going to get all these great things from all the stuff that I do. And it just kept going from there. I got freedom from the food. I started losing the weight. I started working out. I started getting in shape. I started being able to look in the mirror and like the person I see. I started feeling confident about things. You know, when I first got here, I was very insecure and self-conscious, and started feeling confidence. You know, started getting rid of the fear. Now, when I wake up in the morning, it's usually some fear of some job that we're working on, or something like that. And I came up with some affirmations about 7 years ago that are hanging on my wall. So as soon as that fear hits me in the morning, I just start spouting off those affirmations, and the fear goes away. And you know, I don't really know exactly how to, you know, tell you how it suddenly realized that God, but it's just a process. You know, that's what it's been for me. It's been a process. The higher power is definitely my go-to person. Now, you were talking about meditation. Up till 13 years ago, every time I worked the steps before that in that, this program and the other, I would get to the 11th step and start talking about, you know, dude, I'm going to meditate, you know. But I thought at that point you had to have a clear mind in order to meditate. I thought everything had to be completely out of your mind so you could be like Zen-like and be able to sit there for a few minutes. So every time I got to that point, I failed miserably because I could never get the thoughts out of my head. And then we actually hired a transcendental meditation person to help us meditate. And he said, oh, no, you just do this and that, and there's always thoughts coming in your head. I'm like, okay, cool. So I started doing that, and I do 10 minutes a day, every day, in the morning. It's one of my first things after I get a shower. It's a 10-minute meditation every morning, and it's made my life better. I don't know how it has, but yeah, it's just like you said. I mean, it's so great. Because I actually have some response time between action and reaction now that keeps me from getting into trouble, you know, all the time. And that's a really, I mean, that's a God blessing right there, you know. That's a cool thing because I used to act right when something happened and scream and yell and then found out that it wasn't their fault and had to make an amends and, you know, stuff like that. So we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. So I just have to say, I guess the for me ultimately it's just a matter of process. That's what I get out of this. So thank you for letting me share.
Okay. So just to wrap it up, let's give all our speakers a know what